So thank you all for coming this morning. And first of all, I want to say how appreciative I am of all of the members of the communications media to join us, and also to compliment you and your very important work in communication with the broader community. I hope to have the opportunity to come to know as many as you I possibly can of you during my stay, hopefully a long stay here in Des Moines. But please know, first of all, of the deep appreciation that I have for you and your media to be with us today. I'm ever so grateful to His Holiness Pope Benedict XVI for appointing me as the ninth Bishop of Des Moines. It is a welcome privilege to be called to serve such a vibrant, spirited community in the heartland of America. I look forward to our life together. Coming from the Archdiocese of St. Paul and Minneapolis, I join an interchange of leadership between the two dioceses. It began when the first Bishop of Des Moines, Austin Dowling, in 1919, was appointed as Archbishop of St. Paul, succeeding the legendary John Ireland. The direction was reversed in 1987 and 1993, when two friends of mine, Auxiliary Bishops of St. Paul and Minneapolis, William Bullock and Joseph Sharon, were appointed 7th and 8th Bishops of Des Moines, respectively. I feel particularly honored to succeed Bishop Sharon. As bishop, he is highly respected. As shepherd, he has been remarkably effective. As friend and brother, he is unfailingly supportive. Bishop Sharon, thank you for the leadership you have rendered the Des Moines Diocese for 13 years. You have left a rich legacy and left the task before me particularly inviting. As I undertake the role of Bishop of Des Moines, my initial priority will be coming to know this community. I look forward to visiting the 82 parishes and the numerous institutions in the 23 counties in southwestern Iowa. I hope to do so on an introductory basis before Christmas. The early days will also be a time to establish relationships with the 100 or so priests, the diocesan staff, the religious women and men, the permanent deacons, and the seminarians preparing to serve the diocese. With eager anticipation, I look forward to meeting the tens of thousands of you who constitute that wonderful reality, the Church. Be assured that I embrace all with a shepherd's heart. In pursuit of the common good, I pledge to work cooperatively and energetically with our ecumenical and interfaith brothers and sisters, our government officials, leaders from the agricultural, educational, business, industrial, labor, and social service sectors of society. It might recently be asked, do I have any themes or priorities that I anticipate will characterize my ministry in Des Moines? Naturally, the first commitment is to my role as pastor, maintaining an openness to situations and to needs of the moment. One experience that I have benefited from in the Archdiocese of St. Paul and Minneapolis under Archbishop Harry Flynn is the development of a vocation culture. From what I know about this community, I believe all of the elements of such a culture are present to coalesce. Among the elements are an energized, committed faith community. Secondly, life-giving and widespread Eucharistic devotion. Thirdly, support, encouragement, and engagement of youth and young adults in church life. And fourthly, prayerful and very positive opportunities for young people to listen to and to discern God's call, either to the priesthood, to life as a vowed woman or man religious, to the permanent diaconate, or to lay ecclesial ministry. Such a vocation culture, I am convinced, is reflective of a diocesan community's realization of mission, of its purpose, and thus also symptomatic of its health. During my time as bishop, I have become strongly committed to evangelization. Pope John Paul II coined the phrase new evangelization. Quite simply, in Western society, it means a conscious effort by us believers to recognize our call to make the gospel known in place. That is, where we live, on the ground, so to speak. It is a consciousness that is exercised explicitly in the church through catechesis, liturgy, RCIA, and other opportunities. Implicitly, it is exercised in our dialogue with the culture, in communication provided through the opportunities of modern technology, through the advocacy of social justice, our tireless care for the sick, the suffering, the vulnerable, and the tsunami soon to swamp us, the seniors and the aged. An additional priority for me will be ministry to our youth and young adults. In every setting that I have been vitalized by their partnership in the life of the church. They are important. As part of this first day, I very much look forward to visiting youth representatives at Dowling Catholic School. As I prepare to come to Des Moines, I express profound gratitude for the great joy and opportunity of ministering for most of my priesthood at home in the Archdiocese of St. Paul and Minneapolis. I have been blessed in my association with its outstanding priests and religious, with its remarkably dedicated faithful, and for the cherished friendships that have sustained me over the years. In particular, I am grateful to Archbishop Harry Flynn. He has been a mentor without peer, one who preaches the gospel in season and out of season, and with a heart like that of Jesus, his heart has room for all. I am indebted to him and to coadjutor Archbishop John Nienstedt for their friendship and their support. I want to express a heartfelt word of commendation and appreciation to Monsignor Steve Orr, who has served as administrator of the diocese this past year, and also to the competent diocesan staff who assisted him. They have kept the ship on course, and I very much look forward to collaborating and to being with all of them in the days to come. The date for my installation as Ninth Bishop of Des Moines has been set for Thursday, May 29th. I invite all who are able, and especially youth and young adults, to join Archbishop Pietro Sandi, representative of Pope Benedict XVI in the United States, Archbishop Jerome Hannes of Dubuque, me, and all of our other guests as we begin our time together. I want all to know that they are most welcome as we gather for a community for the first time. Next week, Pope Benedict XVI will make his first pastoral visit as Pope to the United States. This occasion recalls a historic moment in 1979 when Pope John Paul II visited Living History Farms and cast the Diocese of Des Moines into the national spotlight. This prominence was not accidental. For Iowa, Des Moines, the rich fertile land and farming culture have earned the well-deserved designation America's Heartland. With such people and environment, so natural and wholesome, this community of faith, I believe, has unlimited potential. It is indeed a rare privilege for me to join you on your journey of faith. May God bless our pilgrimage together. Those are my prepared remarks, and I would be very happy to answer any questions. And I understand also from Anne Marie that I'd be happy to make myself available afterward for anybody who would like to speak individually about my coming here. So if you have any immediate questions, I would welcome them and at this time.
Do you know much about the state of Iowa? Have you visited or been here before? Any impressions of it?
I do. I've visited here several times. My dad's parent, my grandfather was from Iowa, northern Iowa, so I've had numerous relatives and have visited them on occasion. Also, when I was served as rector of St. John Vianney Seminary in St. Paul, I was privileged to serve a number of students from this diocese of Des Moines. Among them was an individual named Greg Gall, who was and with whom I became a friend and his family, and who was murdered, unfortunately, a number of years ago. And I came down for his funeral and had an opportunity at that time to meet a number of people and continue to have a relationship with his wife, Nan Gall, his parents, and some others. So I visited Harlan, Iowa, and been with the people out there for Mass and celebration on several occasions. So it's not entirely new, but I think I've got a lot of opportunity also to learn a lot more.
Bishop Sharon, what do you understand from talking to him about what the biggest need is, or what the biggest challenge the diocese faces right now?
Well, Bishop Sharon was very wise. I think he left on his trip the night I was appointed, and he gets back tonight. So everything is rosy from his perspective, you know. I think talking with several, you know, and as I mentioned, that I'm going to be very dedicated to what we call a vocation culture. In the Archdiocese of St. Paul, Minneapolis, for the last number of years, we have had between 70 to 75 candidates for priesthood in the 8 years of preparation, seminary preparation. We also have had about 40 or 50 ordinations. So we have been very, very blessed with a lot of vocations, and I believe that they are there. All of our churches are struggling a little bit to catch up in that area. We need more priests. We need, in addition to more priests, permanent deacons, lay ecclesial ministers, all of that. So I will give very dedicated and pointed attention to that reality, along with the collaborators here who are working with me on that. So that would be number one. I also am very interested in working with our youth and young adults and building up the church. That is an extremely vital outreach to them. And then I think I'm trying to be a pastor, to be present to people, to get to know them, and to lead the faithful in a way that brings about a great unity in the faith with the richness of diversity that we all share. So those might be two or three of the things that I begin with. Well, I think from my experience in St. Paul, as I outlined here, is that there's not a silver bullet, you know, that we're not going to come up with one idea and that's going to resolve the vocation issue or crisis. That it's trying to develop a culture in which young Catholics and young adults feel that it is a very promising opportunity to give and serve and give a part of their life for the community. And so it's a real work to develop and to bring together all of the elements that constitute that culture. I believe that they're here, but together then we have to bring them together, put them in the fore, and make them very operative. So I think that's what we're really looking at and trying to achieve. I think that's what I feel has happened in St. Paul, Minneapolis, also in other dioceses, Minnesota, Duluth, Winona, that they also are getting a lot number of vocations. So it's not a phenomenon where it's dried up totally or it's hopeless, but it requires our attention and really working at it to give the vitality that we need to the church and the leadership that it requires. I don't know if that answers your question. So I think the basic question is, what do we expect from the Pope's visit? Who is this individual, the Pope? And because he's a little bit unknown quantity, perhaps, in the United States after Pope John Paul II. I've had the opportunity to be with the Pope on two or three occasions. One is Holy Father. And in 1984, he visited St. Paul, Minnesota on the occasion of the 15th anniversary of St. John Vianney Seminary when I was rector. And he also visited St. Thomas University, received an honorary degree there. And then a few years ago, when Archbishop Flynn and I were in Rome for our ad limina, that we had an opportunity to be with Cardinal Ratzinger, and we introduced ourselves. Oh, he says, I was in St. Paul. Wonderful community, huh? Received the honorary degree there. So he was very happy with that honorary degree. And on our visit at that occasion, that he is a person who represents a great openness. That sometimes when you visit the different congregations, kind of the offices of the Holy Father, that they like to direct the conversation. But when we were with Cardinal Ratzinger, he opened his arms, he says, "What can I do for you? What would you like to talk about?" And that became the agenda for our meeting. And then a couple of years ago, I was back in Rome and I was able to sit in the platform during a general audience, and then we get an opportunity to visit with the Pope for half a minute or so. And again, he says, "Oh, I've been in St. Paul, huh?" in 1984 to receive honorary degree. So he's only been here twice before. So he's had a little bit of taste of the Midwest, Dallas and St. Paul on that occasion, and I believe in Philadelphia the second. So this is only his third time also. So we are somewhat of a new quantity to him as well as he to us. I believe that he is an enormously gifted theologian, that he is an individual, as a matter of fact, after he was elected Pope, that one of my Lutheran colleagues, or one of my Lutheran friends in St. Paul at Lutheran Theological College there said that finally the Catholic Church has a first-rate theologian as Pope. So I think he comes from an academic circle. He is a very competent theologian. And he has a great deal of warmth and also a real strong ability to key in you as an individual at the moment that he's speaking to you and establish some really valuable contact. In terms of what he hopes to say, can't predict it if he follows the path that he has been following, that he will, I think, you know, his first encyclical took everybody by surprise, Deus Caritas Est, that God is love. And then the other one is Saved by Hope, is his second encyclical. So I think that he will speak to the fact that America is a very strong country. It is still a believing country. Unlike Europe, it has not gone down the slippery slope of relativism and basically has devoid of a real religious experience today. And I encourage us on our path and on our journey and to be aware of the need to focus in to have God as a center and a real compass of our lives, that all of the what we accomplish is so beneficial in terms of development, human development, but that we need God as the center, God as the partner going forward. So that's purely a guess on my part, so I have no pipeline there. I look forward to being there next week. We will be at National Park, the new Washington Nationals Park, for the Mass. And then we also have an opportunity to have the bishops of the United States to have a meeting with the Pope. So I think he'll bring people who like him. He is a little bit more retiring and I would say shy than Pope John Paul II, who was, you know, so open and honest. So it's a little bit of a change of style, but I think he has some very valuable insight and understanding that would be uplifting for all of us. No, it wasn't on my agenda. First time that I was named auxiliary bishop, they called me to Washington to the Apostolic Nuncio's office, and it was on the day that Vice President Gore threw in the towel, so to speak, in his first in the year when he was defeated by President Bush. And so it's right across the street. So when I got there, I thanked the nuncio for calling out the press. And because there are all kinds of trucks, and it was just jammed with these communication trucks and vehicles, etc. And then we went into it a little bit, and then finally he got around to the point and said, "Oh, the Holy Father would like you to be the new auxiliary bishop in St. Paul, Minneapolis." And my immediate response is, "I'm very happy. I just had been the founding pastor of a new parish in Woodbury, Minnesota. I was only there 3 years. We were just completing the new church, and it was kind of a moment of real happiness to have reached that point. I look forward to being with that community thereafter. Starting a new parish is one of the most exhilarating experiences that you can have, and I had really enjoyed it." And so finally I told him that I'm real happy just to continue to do what I'm doing. And then he changed the subject. He went off and talked about something else. And then he concluded that by saying, "Now that you've accepted, you go say a prayer and I'll call Archbishop Flynn." So, you know, You do what you do, but I have to admit that I've never requested an assignment in my life, that I've always just gone where they've told me. And I have to also be honest that when I first had the assignment to St. Ambrose, that was the least that I was trying to duck and be out of a cover. And that. But then I went there, and it was, I would have to say, one of the most enjoyable experiences ever. So you never know what is in front of you, but you just try to do the best you can in the service that you render. Okay, Deacon.
Yes, what will your approach be to dealing with some of the various hot button issues that tend to generate a lot of debate and dissent in today's situation?
Okay, leave it up to the deacons to get a good question. He's asking what would we do with the hot button questions, and I presume that you mean abortion stem cell research and some of the other issues. Well, first of all, I think that we have to enter into a dialogue about them and to get them to an opportunity so we can really try to get to the bottom of what are the principles that govern our understanding and the approach that we take. Because I think we're in very strong opposing camps, and what we need to do, for instance, I think, and the Catholic Church is not against stem cell research. That what it really takes objection to is embryonic stem cell research, because we firmly believe that life begins from the moment of that conception, and that life is there, human life is there, and that human life can never be used for the service of another. And so you can't take my life necessarily and kill me because somebody has some need out there in terms of their own physical stature. So I think it's a question, but we are in favor of stem cell research. And as a matter of fact, adult stem cell research has so far held much more promise than in even embryonic stem cell research. And so what we're really proposing is that we go down the avenue that we can all agree upon to see the benefit that can occur and thereby enable all of society to really take advantage of that. And we obviously want people to get well, people who have terrible, burdensome diseases and illnesses and all that sort of thing, defects, can be helped by this experimentation and this going down this work. The same is true with abortion. We very simply say that life begins at the moment of conception, that it doesn't end until natural death, and that in the meanwhile, that we have the responsibility from each of those moments to preserve and enhance life and the dignity of life. And if we work together to achieve that, then I think we will really be following the lead of our own Declaration of Independence, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and we can really operate fully as a community in achieving our ends. So what I would say with the hot button questions is that we really don't want to avoid them. We want to enter into dialogue with them, but I think it's very important that we just do not throw slogans back and forth, that we really get to an in-depth discussion and dialogue, because I think people have dug in, and sometimes we do not have the respect of discussion that we should have, and the opportunity really to come together in preservation of those values that are so very important and central to our lives.